Lehrabschlussprüfungen für Kauffrau Kaufmann. Englisch, Hörverstehen, Serie Beta 2. Each part of this listening comprehension will be played twice. Task A. Look at the notes below. Listen to the monologues. Fill in the missing information. You now have 20 seconds to look at the tasks. Now listen. 1. An urgent voicemail.
Hi Mark, it's Liz. I'm so sorry to call you at this time of day, but it's really, really urgent. The French team is not arriving at 11:50 tomorrow morning, but already at 8:15. Yes, no kidding. And their new flight number is AF1680. Oh yes. And before I forget, there's a change in the number of people attending. Actually, rather than 21, there'll be 25 people coming, so there are 4 more. That means you need to change the booking with the hotel. Call them on 020-7493-8181. If you need any help with the arrangements, just call me on my mobile. The number is 077-6933-6522. See you at the airport in the early morning then.
You are going to hear the text again in about 5 seconds.
Hi Mark, it's Liz. I'm so sorry to call you at this time of day, but it's really, really urgent. The French team is not arriving at 11:50 tomorrow morning, but already at 8:15. Yes, no kidding. And their new flight number is AF1680. Oh yes, and before I forget, there's a change in the number of people attending. Actually, rather than 21, there'll be 25 people coming, so there are 4 more. That means you need to change the booking with the hotel. Call them on 020-7493-8181. If you need any help with the arrangements, just call me on my mobile. The number is 077-6933-6522. See you at the airport in the early morning then.
Now go on to part 2. 2. A message on an answer phone.
Hello, Miss Johansson. It's Jacob from the Starlight Movie Agency, and I'm leaving this message since I could not reach you on the phone. I'm sorry to say that we have not received the contract yet, with your signature, of course. We sent it off 5 days ago, on the 20th of May. I trust you have received it, and I'm sure we had agreed on a same-day return. I'm afraid we really need to get it now, as we cannot go ahead with the project. The contract number is SCJ084XX. That's SCJ084XX. Please call me at the Cork office as soon as you can. Thank you so much.
You are going to hear the text again in about 5 seconds.
Hello, Miss Johansson. It's Jacob from the Starlight Movie Agency, and I'm leaving this message since I could not reach you on the phone. I'm sorry to say that we have not received the contract yet, with your signature, of course. We sent it off 5 days ago, on the 20th of May. I trust you have received it, and I'm sure we had agreed on a same-day return. I'm afraid we really need to get it now, as we cannot go ahead with the project. The contract number is SCJ084XX. That's SCJ084XX. Please call me at the Cork office as soon as you can. Thank you so much.
This is the end of task A. Task B will begin in about 20 seconds. Task B. You will now listen to Laurie Santos interviewing Barry Schwartz, a psychology professor and author of the book Why We Work. For each question, mark the best answer, A, B, or C. Tick one answer only. You now have 30 seconds to look at the task. Ready?
Hi, everybody. This is the Happiness Lab with me, Dr. Laurie Santos. I'm here with Barry Schwartz, a psychology professor, author of the book Why We Work. Barry, what could make work life better for the nearly 100 million Americans who feel unhappy on the job? Many think we'd be happier if only we had a bigger salary. But are they right? Can employers really improve the well-being of the nearly two-thirds of people who hate their jobs simply by paying them more?
If you choose a career just because it comes with a great paycheck, you could get stuck in a high-paying job that you hate. And that's one of the reasons why people who have jobs with the highest salaries, doctors, lawyers, Wall Street investors, are depressed more often than the average population. The way we work today starts from the belief that people are lazy and just want to lie on a couch watching Netflix. That if they didn't have to work, they wouldn't. They work only for the money. And that is wrong.
So are you saying that people would work even if they didn't get paid?
No, of course they wouldn't, but as soon as they have enough money to support their families, money is not what motivates them.
And why are so many workers unhappy?
Because employers treat them as lazy people motivated only by money.
But what is it that makes us want to get up in the morning then?
A job that is active, interesting, challenging, not the same thing over and over again. If you take those things away, you'll have more unhappy, less productive, less motivated workers.
So are people who have repetitive jobs more unhappy?
Not necessarily. Take people who clean in hospitals. The job doesn't require previous experience or formal education. It's neither glamorous nor all that skilled. What they have to do is not fun stuff. Mop the floors, wash bed linens, empty garbage bins. I asked a group of hospital workers, how skilled do you think your job is? Well, some said, it's not very skilled at all. And others, the work is really quite skilled.
And was one group happier than the other?
Yes. I found that those who considered themselves unskilled were not happy with their jobs. They were part of those two-thirds of Americans unhappy with their work life. But the staff members who saw their job as requiring skill loved it.
Were there any differences in the way the two groups did their job?
Yes. People in the happy group, although they were instructed not to speak with patients, had found things in the job they were doing to match their personal abilities and ideas, and this gave them a sense of meaning from their job.
Can you give me an example?
Take Anna, a cleaner. In the hospital where there is a lot of throwing up, she was just supposed to clean up and do nothing else. Instead, she turned this into an opportunity to bring comfort and humor to the patients. And so she would show up and say, "I want to thank you for getting sick. I have a car, and I have car payments to make. So the more you throw up, the more money I can make." You see, this joke made patients laugh. And this is because a person found a way in which she can still clean up, which is the job required of her, but in a way she likes and which has an impact on patients' lives.
But as you say, in most jobs, like in Anna's, people cannot express their personal abilities and ideas.
Yes, but as we have seen, people do it anyway, because it is what motivates them to go to work. So employers should give employees more autonomy to bring their abilities into the work that they're doing, while trusting them that they will keep in mind the things required of them.
Thank you, Barry.
You're going to hear the text again in about 10 seconds.
Hi, everybody. This is the Happiness Lab with me, Dr. Laurie Santos. I'm here with Barry Schwartz, a psychology professor, author of the book Why We Work. Barry, what could make work life better for the nearly 100 million Americans who feel unhappy on the job? Many think we'd be happier if only we had a bigger salary. But are they right? Can employers really improve the well-being of the nearly two-thirds of people who hate their jobs simply by paying them more?
If you choose a career just because it comes with a great paycheck, you could get stuck in a high-paying job that you hate. And that's one of the reasons why people who have jobs with the highest salaries, doctors, lawyers, Wall Street investors, are depressed more often than the average population. The way we work today starts from the belief that people are lazy and just want to lie on a couch watching Netflix. That if they didn't have to work, they wouldn't. They work only for the money. And that is wrong.
So are you saying that people would work even if they didn't get paid?
No, of course they wouldn't, but as soon as they have enough money to support their families, money is not what motivates them.
And why are so many workers unhappy?
Because employers treat them as lazy people motivated only by money.
But what is it that makes us want to get up in the morning then?
A job that is active, interesting, challenging, not the same thing over and over again. If you take those things away, you'll have more unhappy, less productive, less motivated workers.
So are people who have repetitive jobs more unhappy?
Not necessarily. Take people who clean in hospitals. The job doesn't require previous experience or formal education. It's neither glamorous nor all that skilled. What they have to do is not fun stuff. Mop the floors, wash bed linens, empty garbage bins. I asked a group of hospital workers, "How skilled do you think your job is?" Well, some said, "It's not very skilled at all." And others, "The work is really quite skilled."
And was one group happier than the other?
Yes. I found that those who considered themselves unskilled were not happy with their jobs. They were part of those two-thirds of Americans unhappy with their work life. But the staff members who saw their job as requiring skill loved it.
Were there any differences in the way the two groups did their job?
Yes. People in the happy group, although they were instructed not to speak with patients, had found things in the job they were doing to match their personal abilities and ideas, and this gave them a sense of meaning from their job.
Can you give me an example?
Take Anna, a cleaner, in the hospital where there is a lot of throwing up. She was just supposed to clean up and do nothing else. Instead, she turned this into an opportunity to bring comfort and humor to the patients. And so she would show up and say, "I want to thank you for getting sick. I have a car, and I have car payments to make. So the more you throw up, the more money I can make. You see, this joke made patients laugh. And this is because a person found a way in which she can still clean up, which is the job required of her, but in a way she likes and which has an impact on patients' lives.
But as you say, in most jobs, like in Anna's, people cannot express their personal abilities and ideas.
Yes, but as we have seen, people do it anyway, because it is what motivates them to go to work. So employers should give employees more autonomy to bring their abilities into the work that they're doing, while trusting them that they will keep in mind the things required of them.
Thank you, Barry.
This is the end of Task B. Task C will begin in about 20 seconds. Task C. Listen to Maria Kornikova interviewing Reed Hastings, co-founder and co-CEO of Netflix, about why his company is so successful. Please fill in the gaps in the sentences below with the correct form of the keyword or keywords. Use one or two words. You now have 1 minute to read the sentences below. And here we go.
Everyone knows Netflix. It has 8,600 employees and a market value of $228 billion. But when Netflix went public in 2002, the company had just 600,000 subscribers and was losing money. So, it was considered a crazy business idea. We're now talking with Reed Hastings, co-founder and co-CEO of Netflix. His new book, No Rules, Rules, explains why Netflix is now so successful. Reed, you write that Netflix is less like a perfectly synchronized orchestra and more like a jazz band, where all the musicians know the rules and how to play, but nothing is planned.
Yes. Many companies today just try very hard to avoid mistakes. But I believe that too many rules can kill creativity and innovation. Of course, it's not as simple as just taking away the rules. You've got to figure out ways to make people work well together. You've got to focus less on efficiency, but more on flexibility these days.
So, what does it mean to be a company that runs on no rules, rules?
It all started when, in the spring of 2001, crisis struck. We had to fire a third of our staff. In the days before, I was worried that I would make everyone angry and motivation in the office would go away. I was convinced that those who stayed would think that the company wasn't loyal to their employees. The day of the layoffs arrived, and it was awful. Those who were fired cried, slammed doors. But within a few weeks, the atmosphere improved dramatically. And by early 2002, our business was growing rapidly again. Suddenly, we were doing far more work, with 30% fewer employees, with a passion that seemed higher than ever.
So, the first and most important step of No Rules Rules is hiring people you trust and give them power. Don't tell them what they can do and what they can't do. Let them decide for themselves, right?
Precisely. I view Netflix not as a family, but but as a sports team. Each position should be filled by the best athlete. And of course, it's also about giving power to those people once you get them to come on board. One of the key beliefs of Netflix is to get rid of the usual controls you have in large companies. The idea is to entrust employees. So, for example, they are able to decide for themselves about the number of hours they work in a day, or things like expense reports, vacation policies, and so on.
Really? But if employees can take as many holidays as they want, do they ever come to work?
People get a social understanding, and that seems to work pretty well. I wanted to promote flexibility, employee freedom, and innovation, instead of avoiding mistakes. If you give your employees more freedom, they will make better decisions, and it's easier for them to see that they are responsible. This also makes for a happier, more motivated workforce. Plus, at Netflix, leaders lead through their own behaviours. It's the opposite of do as I say, not as I do. We come to work and we expect everybody else to do the same.
Thank you, Reed.
You are going to hear the text again in about 10 seconds.
Everyone knows Netflix. It has 8,600 employees and a market value of $228 billion. But when Netflix went public in 2002, the company had just 600,000 subscribers and was losing money. So, it was considered a crazy business idea. We're now talking with Reed Hastings, co-founder and co-CEO of Netflix. His new book, No Rules Rules, explains why Netflix is now so successful. Reed, you write that Netflix is less like a perfectly synchronized orchestra and more like a jazz band, where all the musicians know the rules and how to play, but nothing is planned.
Yes. Many companies today just try very hard to avoid mistakes. But I believe that too many rules can kill creativity and innovation. Of course, it's not as simple as just taking away the rules. You've got to figure out ways to make people work well together. You've got to focus less on efficiency, but more on flexibility these days.
So, what does it mean to be a company that runs on no rules rules?
It all started when, in the spring of 2001, crisis struck. We had to fire a third of our staff. In the days before, I was worried that I would make everyone angry and motivation in the office would go away. I was convinced that those who stayed would think that the company wasn't loyal to their employees. The day of the layoffs arrived, and it was awful. Those who were fired cried, slammed doors. But within a few weeks, the atmosphere improved dramatically. And by early 2002, our business was growing rapidly again. Suddenly, we were doing far more work, with 30% fewer employees, with a passion that seemed higher than ever.
So, the first and most important step of No Rules Rules is hiring people you trust and give them power. Don't tell them what they can do and what they can't do. Let them decide for themselves, right?
Precisely. I view Netflix not as a family, but as a sports team. Each position should be filled by the best athlete. And of course, it's also about giving power to those people once you get them to come on board. One of the key beliefs of Netflix is to get rid of the usual controls you have in large companies. The idea is to entrust employees. So, for example, they are able to decide for themselves about the number of hours they work in a day, or things like expense reports, vacation policies, and so on.
Really? But if employees can take as many holidays as they want, do they ever come to work?
People get a social understanding, and that seems to work pretty well. I wanted to promote flexibility, employee freedom, and innovation, instead of avoiding mistakes. If you give your employees more freedom, they will make better decisions, and it's easier for them to see that they are responsible. This also makes for a happier, more motivated workforce. Plus, at Netflix, leaders lead through their own behaviours. It's the opposite of do as I say, not as I do. We come to work and we expect everybody else to do the same.
Thank you, Reed.
This is the end of Task C. You now have time to complete your answers. This is the end of your English listening comprehension exam. Please stop writing and hand in your paper.